I'm very pleased to have in the studio with me this morning Dennis Anderson. He's a candidate for the Illinois 14th District House seat. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've been hearing you a lot on Norman Goldman. That's got to be great, though.
It's fun.
You're making the national scene.
Yeah, it's fun. I love Norm.
I do too. You got to meet him in person.
Yes.
when he was in town, because
yes.
You came to one of the events. I came to the next day, the day after you were with him. And he is just the nicest guy.
Yes, he is.
He's so genuine. That's the other thing. You know, you sometimes meet radio people and they're not what they sound like. He is everything and more. I mean, just so gracious. He gave us a hit for your appearance on this show.
Great. I appreciate it.
if you were listening to Norman Goldman this past Thursday, he said that you were going to be on the program. I have to ask you two questions. What the heck is it like running for Congress? Why the heck would you put yourself through that? I mean, as you know, and this is not a secret, and this is not even a particularly interesting question. Congress is pretty well despised in our country.
It's right up there with Ebola.
Yeah, exactly. and yet there are people like you who think that they can go and change things. I assume that's why you're doing.
You say,
I'm different. I can make this Congress work. You know, obviously, in the House of Representatives, you can't do it by yourself.
True. No, but I believe that we have to start. And we have to start seat by seat. It is entirely dysfunctional, as everyone knows, and it doesn't have to be that way, and it shouldn't be that way. And we just need to have members in the House who are willing to talk to one another, and more importantly, to listen to one another. And I am that. I ran in 2012.
That's okay. My phone goes off all the time. you're running for Congress. If your phone isn't going off, you're in trouble.
Well, it hasn't worked all morning, so I don't know why it decided to work now.
That's the way these things go, you know.
Yeah.
It's the Murphy's Law.
Yeah, so I ran in 2012, which was the first time I'd ever run for anything, and lost. It's important. It's worth doing. I think that there are so many major issues that are not even being discussed at all, really, in Congress, such as the poverty rate in the country, and mm-hmm. and the continued unemployment and the wealth inequality.
I hear the majority in Congress say we're trying to get jobs bills passed, but they're not being passed.
Yeah, well, they've passed. They like to tout the fact that they've passed. I think 40-some. I've lost count. 40-some. Jobs bills, but I encourage people not to take my word for it, but just go online and take a look at those bills, and there are no jobs in them. You know, they're to weaken the Environmental Protection Agency, which obviously is always a favorite target. They're to weaken the Securities and Exchange Commission. They're not jobs bills.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I have no delusions about the power of one person or the power of particularly a freshman member of the House, which is probably the lowest form of life on earth, to make massive changes. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try and we shouldn't start. And so that's why I'm doing it again.
And what has so it's the second time around. Does it get any easier?
Not really. Not really.
I imagine you're going like 18, 19, 20 hours a day.
Yeah. It was never part of my life plan. You know, I never had this on my to-do list. I'm retired, so I'm not looking to add anything to my resume.
I'm thinking about folks. How many folks do you think have running for Congress on their bucket list?
I don't know.
I'm not one of those guys, I can tell you that.
But it's important, and it's I think worth doing, because people need to feel represented, and they're not feeling that now.
No, I will completely agree with you on that. Even though, okay, I live in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and Luis Gutierrez is my congressman, and I agree with about 99%. Of what he does. And there are people like that.
Yes. Oh, yes.
In the country who agree with their representative on most of the issues. But in this case, most of those issues aren't even being addressed.
Correct.
And I know he's a huge advocate of immigration reform. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen. And why? It's clear. It's plain on the nose of anybody's face that the whole thing, the whole raison d'etre of the current House of Representatives is to keep President Obama from signing anything that could be a worthwhile legislation. So they can say at the end of it, look, he didn't get anything done. And in the process, they're trashing themselves. The least productive Congress in the history of the United States. What I want somebody to do in the major media is to say to one of those representatives, preferably John Boehner, at long last, sir, have you no decency?
Mm-hmm.
Have you no decency for taking this tack, for using this, your office, simply as a means to block the first black president of the United States? Have you no decency, sir?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody will say it.
No. I suspect that John Boehner wakes up every morning in a cold sweat wondering, you know, how did I get myself into this, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I think that personally Boehner would like to see a different house, would like to see the house functioning differently.
I think you're right. I think deep down he has goals of getting things done.
Yes.
I think he is a victim of his own cowardice in that it's more important to him to maintain his job as speaker than it is to get things done. And that's a tragic flaw. That's Shakespearean, basically.
Yes.
That's Shakespearean in nature,
mm-hmm.
that kind of flaw of character. Because I think if he actually stood up, he and fought for jobs, fought for immigration reform, fought for protecting. I mean, he's in Ohio. He just saw what happened to Lake Erie, and you and I are going to start talking about environmental issues because that's why you're on this program. If he fought for those things, he would be respected, and I think his own base would rally around him.
Yeah. I agree. I think that there's a There are so many things that contribute to the dilemma that we're in now. You know, it's the age of permanent campaigning. It's the age of permanent fundraising. Incumbent members of Congress spend anywhere from 25 to 50% of their time raising money, which means that's 25 to 50% of their time that's spent really not serving the purpose for mm-hmm. which they were sent to Washington. And there is the career aspect. I run into people who say, you people, you get elected to Congress and you just stay there forever. And I always tell them, you know, how the hell long can I stay? I'm 63 already.
Yeah.
<You know>?
Yeah. Well,
I'm not looking to start a career.
Yeah. And you're right about the money thing. I mean, and that's really what's killing our democracy.
Yes.
Right now. It's being strangled by the moneyed interests and the fact that Congress people and senators have to sit and dial and call contribute. That's humiliating. That's just embarrassing.
I think it's soul destroying. It really is.
Yeah. Absolutely. So you're looking forward to that, huh? Once you get elected?
No. I intend to take a different tack. You know, one of my I often recite this story that I heard about. I grew up in Wisconsin, and there used to be a senator from Wisconsin by the name of and I'm going to block on his name, the Golden Fleece. Bill Proxmire.
Oh, okay, right.
And there was a story circulating that Bill Proxmire, when he won the first time, he told people, okay, that's it. If you like what I do in the Senate, vote for me next time. If you don't like it, vote against me, but I'm not campaigning again. You know, and I admire that. I don't know if the story's true. I like to think it's true.
How many times was he reelected?
Five or six, I think.
Yeah. He had to have done some, it seems
yes.
to me. But
the message is good.
Yeah, the message is wonderful. Yeah, and isn't that the way it's supposed to be? If
yeah.
I'm doing my job, then vote for me.
Right.
Now, in this day and age, we've dissected and sliced and diced all of the different media, and you have to be on all of them, and you have to be getting the word out every single second of every single day. And as you said, it's soul destroying. And when can we have our elected representatives get to legislating?
Doing their jobs.
Yeah. We have in the studio, I'm talking to Dennis Anderson, candidate for the 14th Congressional District in Illinois. And if you look at the map of it, you can see why it's an uphill battle for you. I can just look at the geography of that district and that little, it's sort of an upside down L that is the collar counties of Chicago. So I'm looking, oh, yeah. Republican, 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 and, you know, at the different counties that are listed there. And so that's one thing you have going against you, because you're dealing with that sort of thing. And right now, the person who is in office, Randy Hultgren, I did a little search yesterday, went to the League of Conservation Voters. And they do a national environmental scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
His lifetime score is 9%, meaning that 9% of the time they agree with the votes. This conservation organization agrees with, and they're nationally known and quite reputable.
Yes.
This is not a fly-by-night organization by any stretch of the imagination. Lifetime score, 9%. His 2013 score was 4%. So he's getting worse as he goes along, basically, in terms of the environment. And on top of that, as you mentioned on Norman Goldman, he won't even have a town hall meeting. I was looking at, he was talking about the Common Core standards for schools, but he cherry picked the people he wanted to have in the room with him. But he won't meet with his own constituents in general.
That seems to be pretty much the pattern with Republicans these days. Very, very few candidates are actually having town hall meetings.
Really? So he's not unusual?
He's not unusual in that, no.
Oh, but that's sad, too.
It is.
So
sad.
How do you get your voice heard?
Well, excuse me. I've been having my own series of town hall meetings around the district. We've had, I don't know, it's 13, 14 town hall meetings throughout the district thus far, and we're shooting to have at least 20 by the end of October.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to make myself available to people. I view them more as an opportunity for me to hear from people than to speak to people. So basically, they're question and answer sessions, that's sort of our tack. We've made it known that we're available for debates, joint question and answer sessions at any time, and we're hoping that that he can find some time in his busy schedule to fit some in between now and the election.
That would be nice. I assume there won't be any kind of debate or anything like that, and they don't usually have those in congressional races anyway, do they?
You know, it's not so much anymore. Now it's usually the Q&A kinds of...
That go to the newspapers, yeah, and they ask you, including... This thing I have in my hot little hands, which is the Sierra Club questionnaire that you filled up.
Oh, okay.
He does it. You ought to talk to your staff. They actually sent this to me, because they're proud of it. That's a good thing.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. among the things they asked you about fossil fuels tar sands, EPA. You mentioned EPA earlier.
Yeah.
EPA is really interesting because you look at people on the left and environmentalists, and a lot of them would say it's in some ways ineffectual.
Mm-hmm.
And yet on the right, the folks will say it's practically a terrorist organization that is
jackbooted thugs.
Yeah, and ruining business in America. And a lot of us are looking at it and going, really? It's hardly getting the job done. For one thing, it's understaffed and underfunded, and Republicans would like to make it a lot worse.
Yeah.
What would you do about the EPA?
Well, one of the things that I always tell people is that, you know, I'm old enough at 63. I'm old enough to remember Love Canal and the near demise of the California condor and cities choked by smog and the flaming Cuyahoga River.
And right after you today on the show, we're going to be talking about the 100th anniversary tomorrow of the extinction of the passenger pigeon. You know, and this is a, as I say, it's a cautionary tale for the 21st century.
Yeah, the EPA, I'm old enough to remember those things, and I recognize, as we all should, that the waters are much cleaner than they used to be. The air is cleaner. But we're backsliding.
Yes, we are.
We're backsliding, and that's a real concern, particularly when we've got the overarching threat of climate change, which, of course, is sort of a non-starter on the other side of the aisle. We're facing serious problems, serious threats, and we're not addressing them. You know, if you've looked at the league's summary, the league summary of Mr. Holcren's votes, one of the things that I find most disturbing is that here's a man who's on the House Science Committee.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
And one of the things that you see repeatedly in these votes is that he doesn't want to fund, or he's actually taken affirmative steps to defund or restrict the ability of government agencies to engage in climate change research. Now, the only position that I can infer from that is that he believes that the science is settled, that there is no climate change happening.
Or maybe he thinks that the science is settled and he's right on board. He agrees that the climate is changing radically. Although I don't think that.
Well, no. I mean, you would think if there was any doubt in his mind as to whether the science was settled or not, that he would be willing to support continued research because it's a serious issue.
Yeah. The idea that any government agency would ever shut down research at any point for political reasons is an abomination. The same thing is with guns, where by law right now, the CDC is not allowed to do scientific research about the effects of guns and how people are killed and where they're killed. I mean, they shut it down.
Yes.
We can't even do the science?
Right. Yeah, it's very discouraging. It's very discouraging. And I think people need to be more aware of that than they are. You know, so much of what goes on in Washington is not, it's not reported in the media to any great extent, in some cases not at all. And it's because so much of it goes on really in a way behind the scenes, because it's in the amendments. It's not in the big bills that you see discussed in the in the media, but it's in the amendments that are proposed to those bills that you see where people's, you know, that's where the true colors are revealed. And there are so many of these amendments like the proposals to restrict or prevent government agencies from engaging in climate change assessments that, you know, people need to be aware of that.
Some of the things that you mentioned, and again, this is Dennis Anderson from the running for the Congressional District, 14th District in Illinois. You say in your Sierra Club questionnaire that you are in favor of cessation of subsidies for the fossil fuels industry, the creation of new research and development, subsidies for alternative and green energy. There's, you know, one of the things I saw recently is Mr. Holcren is trying. He says we're giving too much money to the wind people. Are you out of your mind? You say the development of a long overdue comprehensive national energy policy. What do you see being in that comprehensive national energy policy?
Well, let me start out by saying that because of the way we're structured and our energy systems have developed, fossil fuels are going to be a part of that mix for a long time to come. You know, it's not
I'm aware of that as well.
We that's not going to be a quick and clean break, but the handwriting is on the wall. And things change. You know, it's the when I studied economics at the University of Wisconsin, you know, one of the stories of disruption of marketplaces was, you know, automobiles killed the buggy whip industry. you know, and, you know, the petroleum industry killed the whale.
And I lie awake at night thinking about that.
And petroleum killed the whale oil industry.
Yeah, but we managed to kill whales in incredible numbers anyway.
That's true. Things change. And, you know, it's fossil fuels, they're dirty and dangerous in the extraction. They're dirty and dangerous in the transport. They're dirty and dangerous in the refinement. And they're hardly benign in their use. And we need to change that. We need to move away from fossil fuels as essentially our only source of energy at this time. And as part of the mix, I mean, I see wind, I see solar, I see tidal. I you don't hear much about tidal power generation, and I think that's underused, particularly as the tides wash further and further up the shore.
I know that's an issue that I have not been that aware of.
Yeah.
Who is using that now? Who's employing that kind of
tidal
energy?
I think there's been some use of tidal power generation in Northern Europe. I don't think it's, you know, to my knowledge, it's not terribly widespread.
But it seems it would make sense because the tides run every day.
Yeah.
Massive amounts of water are involved.
Yeah. In fact, there's a television commercial on now, and I can't remember which petroleum company it's for, but they talk in the ad about, or maybe it's General Electric, I don't know. They talk about creating fans that run under the sea, you know, which mm-hmm. is essentially what we're talking about here. We need to do this. We absolutely need to do this. And so I can't give you an exhaustive list because you never know where research is going to lead us. And that's one of the exciting things about research. You know, sometimes you start out in one direction, you end up with something else altogether different. But we absolutely have to be engaged in it. If we don't engage in serious alternative energy research and development now, I can guarantee you that in 15 or 20 years we're going to be buying the stuff from China and Germany, you mm-hmm. know, because they are doing it. And we need to be on the cutting edge. We could be on the cutting edge.
That is Dennis Anderson running in the congressional 14th district of Illinois. I see we have a couple of calls. We will get to that. I also want to get. Oh, and by the way, before we break, so obviously you're not in favor of the Keystone XL pipeline.
I am not.
Good, and that's very straight talk. Straight talk is appreciated. He is not. And yet, neither am I. And I think it's silly. And we're past that point. The problem with that, though, is it's just one pipeline. You got Enbridge already running pipelines under the Great Lakes, 60-year-old pipelines under the Straits of Mackinac. Mm-hmm. All it takes is one little oops, and our freshwater supply is compromised.
Yeah.
And they're trying to pump tar sands through there, you know, pipes that were not designed to handle tar sands.
Yeah.
I read stories from environmental reporters who are sounding the alarm and say, mainstream media isn't covering this at all. They're all focused on Keystone, but all this other stuff is happening behind the scenes already.
Yeah.
And nobody's paying attention to this, or right. Very few people are paying attention to this.
That's right. And you don't see many reports about the extraordinarily large number of leaks and breaks that we have in this country every year.
If you have a pipe, it's going to leak.
It's just
you know, they'll give you the percentage and it sounds low. Oh, 4% or 8% or whatever. That's a lot of oil.
And tar sands is particularly nasty stuff. I mean, it needs to be heated. It needs to be diluted in order to move through the pipelines. And when those, you know, if there's a leak or a break, it's a particularly nasty problem.
It is. And as we saw in Kalamazoo, mm-hmm. it settles to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's 4 years later, they still haven't cleaned it up.
Yeah.
It's still a problem. Ask anybody who was forced to leave their home near Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Right.
This whole thing that you're doing about animal rights, it's, you know, if you just say animal rights, folks go, that's kind of goofy. But then when you see what you're talking about in terms of animal rights. I know you've had a number of rescue animals
yes.
over the years in your
yes.
household.
Five dogs, five cats.
Wow. That's just keep it going, huh? But that's not the the only thing. Yeah, you're talking about puppy mills here. Ag gag laws, which I've talked about on the show and not enough people talk about. That's another one of those issues you don't see in the mainstream media.
Correct. Yeah.
The idea that reporters can't even get a photograph of a confined animal feeding operation because of a law that says they are entitled to their privacy while they're inhumanely treating the animals there. That, again, that's almost like scientific research. It's like it's shutting down the First Amendment, basically.
Yes.
We have to stop shutting down the First Amendment or we're not worth our salt as a democracy. You talk about the Prevent All Soaring Tactics Act, the PAST Act, which is about horses.
Yes.
And I heard you talk about this on Norman Goldman's show. Explain that issue.
Sure. The soaring is I think everyone has probably seen pictures and films of horses, show horses, that have a particularly high, almost unnatural gait, where they lift their hooves pretty far off the ground. And that's achieved not so much through training, but through some particularly barbaric means, like the application of caustic substances to the horse's lower legs, and then putting small chains around those areas to further irritate it, shoeing them with shoes that cause severe pain in the bottom of their hooves, basically anything to make them not want to put their feet down.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's actually illegal, but it's industry patrolled, it's industry investigated, and there are problems. The practice continues, and the Soaring Act would increase the enforcement of the anti-soaring legislation that already exists. It's a bill, you know, when you talk about how our Congress is broken and dysfunctional and all that, it's a bill that has gotten, I believe, 304 co-sponsors in the House of Representatives, which is staggering. You know, that's
far
amazing.
More than it needs to pass.
That's amazing. And in the case of my opponent, he is not a supporter. And in fact, he is the only, I think, or was
I thought
that?
There were two in Illinois.
That's right. There are two Republicans who did not sign on to the bill. Three of the House Republicans from Illinois did sign on. Both Illinois senators have signed on.
And this bill has not passed yet. I mean, it's been stalled.
No, it's been stalled.
How is it that this has not passed?
Well,
dysfunction again?
Dysfunction.
Dysfunction Junction.
Yes, Dysfunction Junction. I mean, that's a very... The soaring thing is a very it's a narrow issue, but it's a very illustrative issue.
Yes,
you know, my concern there is the animal welfare things. There, you know, we all know about puppy mills, and in fact, one of our current dogs was rescued from a puppy mill in Wisconsin, Maddie, and she's. You know, she's always going to be timid and frightened.
I saw the photos though on your website, and it's just remarkable the turnaround. And
yeah, she's a great little
dog.
She's cute. She's a great little, and she knows it. but you know, there was a bill introduced to require that anyone who sells 50 or more dogs a year has to provide them. You know, time for open, free exercise every day. I mean, that doesn't seem like a particularly, you know, crazy thing to do. But that's similarly has been stalled and, again, does not have the support of my opponent.
And I note that, and this is from your website, your opponent, Randy Holcren, has a rating from the compassion rating from the Animal Welfare Institute, 0. The rating from the Humane Society Legislative Fund, 0. Amazing. And I said something earlier on the show that if you ask me, the measure of a person is often illuminated by the way they treat animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And where they put them on this scheme of thing, because we're all travelers on this planet.
Right.
And I don't believe for one nanosecond that we hold any higher plane of existence than any other animal on the planet.
There was, you know, another large example of misdirection on my opponent's part had to do with the King Amendment. I don't know, the particularly egregious piece of legislation. It was an amendment to the Farm Bill introduced by King of Iowa, and it would have prevented the individual states from passing their own laws on things like the size of chicken cages and things like that. It was aimed at shutting down the state's ability to regulate these things on their own, because a lot of states have made some progressive steps.
Yes, they have.
But this was a particularly nasty piece of legislation. Fortunately, it failed, but it did have the support of my opponent.
You hardly know what to say about that. But I do want to get to some phone calls because
sure.
They are coming in. So let's do that very quickly. We're going to start with Elaine. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Oh, hi. I'm really excited that someone intelligent is running for Congress.
And so am I.
Thank you.
I guess I had two things. One was regarding getting information out. I think maybe we should go back to leafleting at train stations. It seems like that's the only way. When people get something person to person, then they'll start asking the newspapers, you know, well, what about this? And that's one thought. The other, I wanted to talk about how there was a very, very heavy rainstorm. It was, I guess, a month or a month and a half ago. And after that, all the squirrels and rabbits disappeared in our neighborhood. Hmm. And they are barely slowly reappearing, but we had a lot of squirrels around our house, and then the next day they were just gone.
Wow. I hadn't heard anything like that before, but of course that is related to climate change and how the once in a 50-year storm is becoming once a year now, or a couple of times a year. But that's very interesting. Elaine, thank you. Let me have Dennis respond to that.
Okay.
Yeah, the idea of the leafleting and person-to-person contact is something that we are definitely going to be engaging in. Most of those activities we're starting up after Labor Day because people tend not to be too focused on politics during the summer, understandably, because it seems as though it never ends. But we will be doing a lot of outreach and person-to-person contact. The squirrels and rabbits, I'd never heard anything like that before.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Well, let's take one more call from Tom in Bolingbrook. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Dennis. Thank you for your work for the animals. Thank you very much. That's
Thank
very
you.
Thoughtful. I wanted to talk about public transportation real quick. I think that our state of Illinois desperately needs to improve our public transportation, and in particular our bus service, our PACE bus service and our CTA bus service. So, Dennis, just one issue. If you're elected Congress, just beware. Mayor Emanuel wants to demolish Ashland Avenue and put a bus rapid transit, meanwhile ignoring all the CTA buses. So I'm just wondering, do you have a plan for public transit in Illinois that does not include the mayor's ridiculous Ashland BRT plan?
To be perfectly honest, I don't have any sort of detailed plan, but I can tell you that I'm a great supporter of mass transit in its many forms. When I live in Gurnee, and when I used to, before I retired, when I worked at Loyola Medical Center in Maywood, I used to take the train from Libertyville to River Grove and then a bus from River Grove to Loyola. And when we lived in Madison, I either bicycled or took a bus to work. I'm a great believer in mass transit. We need to have better, much better intercity rail and other options, and we definitely need to have better urban, better conceived, better coordinated, better thought out urban mass transit.
And let me just put in a word here, Tom, because I've been following the BRT a little bit. I have to admit I'm not sure what side I'm on there at the yet with it. Because theoretically, it seems to make sense, and who would be inconvenienced are the car drivers, and I don't really have a problem with that. If it can move people quicker, and you know, some people say it's a way to do light rail without actually doing light rail. So what I'm going to do, Tom, is and I understand, and I've seen the opposition to it as well. I need to do a show segment on this, and then and I hope you listen, and then you call in, because I'm kind of interested in what people have to say about BRT. It's a plan that seems to have worked in some places. Will it work in Chicago? I don't know.
I'm have that program.
Yeah. Okay. I'm definitely going to do that, and I appreciate that, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
I'm out of time. I got to get to the passenger pigeon people here. Dennis Anderson, thank you so much for being on board. If you want more information about Dennis Anderson, I got it on my website, MikeNovak.net. Oh, yeah, he was reaching for his phone. No. But just go to his website, which is Dennis Anderson, A-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, the traditional way you spell Anderson. Although, if you don't spell it that way, you don't call it traditional. Dennis Anderson 14, the numerals 14.com. Dennis Anderson 14.com. You can get all the information you want. And, Dennis, again, it was a pleasure talking to you, and we should do it again.
Well,
if we get a chance to.
I really thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and I feel compelled, since I'm on this particular show, to confess openly and publicly that the only things that I've been able to grow in my yard are hosta and buckthorn.
I will talk to you about that. All right. You and I will have a conversation off air about that. All right. Thanks for, see, he came clean on my show. There we go.